the Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata. This is the R1 News here on Radio 1. Ko Seb Aho, and I'll be taking you through the news here on Rapere 11th of August. Coming up on the show, I tēnei rā, we have Sophie with the news headlines and weather. Following that, we have a pre-recorded feature where I spoke to Sam Lasham, the founder of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, about recent wastewater data which indicate Dunedin to be a hotspot for MDMA usage across Aotearoa. Following this, we'll have an explainer on the ongoing saga involving National Party MP Sam Uffendell and the allegations of harassment and bullying that have surfaced over the past week. And then finally, we have a live chat with Andrew Johnston, our local zoologist, for Creature of the Week. But before all that, here is this is Come Apart by Phaser Days, their latest single. Enjoy.
So take a minute, admit it, let's commit to it. It's a decision, and we get used to it.
R1 News headlines. The R1 News weather. The R1 News headlines.
Sorry about that, everyone. Minor technical difficulty. It's now time for the news headlines with Sophie.
Kia ora and good morning. These are your Radio 1 News headlines for Thursday, the 11th of August. The government is progressing with legislation to restructure how Ōranga Tamariki is monitored, despite overwhelming opposition. The Ōranga Tamariki Oversight Bill gets rid of the country's top watchdog for young people, the Children's Commissioner, in favour of a new system which Labor says will be better. Instead, a watchdog role will sit within the Education Review Office, a government department, and the Ombudsman will have the power to investigate and make recommendations. The National Party, ACT, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori do not support the bill as drafted, and neither do child advocates, who argue the legislation is rushed and inadequate. National Party spokesperson for Child Poverty Reduction and Social Development, Louise Upton, stormed out of the House during the debate this week, calling the government's approach disgraceful as the bill moves forward to the select committee stage. Green Party spokesperson for Children and Child Poverty Reduction, Jan Logie, said it was a bad move and went against the Waitangi Tribunal's recommendations. MP in charge, Carmel Sepuloni, said she had met with a range of different children's advocacy groups and had taken some on of their suggested changes. Voice Whakaronga Mai told RNZ it remained far from happy with the drafted bill and any changes that had been made were tokenistic. Critics argue this restructuring should wait until the Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse and State Care reports back next year. The Oranga Tamariki Oversight Bill is progressing only with Labour support and will be read a third time later this year. Tourism Minister Stuart Nash wants to shift the university year so students can work in February and March, but some industry figures have concerns. Nash suggested moving the university year by about 6 to 8 weeks, solving, quote, a whole lot of issues, with worker shortages over summer. Quote, I personally don't see a downside, he said, adding that he was prepared to take the proposal to Cabinet. The tourism industry does not start picking up until about mid-December, as does a lot of the horticultural work. However, University of Canterbury Student Association President Pierce Cowley said that moving the university year would cause disruption and mean final exams in December's sweltering heat. The proposed change would also cause disruption to the currently structured academic year, graduation processes, and require changes in industries that offer work-integrated learning experiences and internships over summer, he said. Nash said he had spoken to a couple of vice-chancellor friends of mine who said that, hypothetically, there was nothing to prevent a shift in the timing of the university year, but there would be work to do because academics would have to alter their planning. However, New Zealand Vice-Chancellor's Committee said that they had not previously heard Mr. Nash's suggestion and therefore had not considered or discussed it. Tourism, hospitality and fruit picking sectors all agreed that while more staff would be helpful, the shortages would still remain and that generally there remains a need for a solution bringing workers to Central Otago and New Zealand. Wanaka builder Glenn Thurston will be climbing Hawea's Corner Peak 53 times over December and January to raise awareness for mental health. Mr. Thurston launched Turn the Corner, a 53-day event in which he will climb the corner 53 times to represent the annual deaths from suicide within the construction industry since 2017. Corner Peak is a 17-kilometre challenging trail walk rising to an elevation of 1,683 metres. The event will start on December 1st and finish on January 22nd. Mr. Thurston said that the hike was focused on changing culture and getting people talking about their struggles with mental health. Quote, suicide is everyone's problem. We're not mind readers, but we can be compassionate. The thing that's going to make the change is conversation, and that doesn't cost a cent, Mr. Thurston said. Thurston will be joined by and supported by several community groups and businesses across the 53-day event. Yesterday's Radio 1 Market Day in Central Library's Link Space drew a mixture of students and members of the public. With Dunedin Mayor and Radio 1 regular Aaron Hawkins on tunes, it was a successful day of students selling everything from clothes to tarot readings. The event was held for a third time this year. Otago University Students Association events coordinator Sharon Van Rogen said, it's always great to see our stallholders returning time and time again and the smiles on everyone's faces when they find something they love. The final market day will take place on September 28th. Those are your Radio 1 news headlines, and now for the weather.
The R1 News weather.
Today will be partly cloudy with the odd shower and then fine. Southerlies will die out this morning. There will be a high of 7 degrees and a low of just 1 degree. Tomorrow will be fine and frosty to start, then cloud increasing and light winds. There will be a high of 10 and a low of 5 degrees.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
If you're just joining us now, that was a lovely rundown of today's news headlines and weather by our R1 News volunteer, Sophie Woodham. Nga mihi, Sophie. Coming up on the show, we have a pre-recorded feature where I talk to Sam Lasham, the founder of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, about recent wastewater data which indicate Dunedin to be a hotspot for MDMA usage across Aotearoa. That's coming up, but before that, we've got Father John Misty with his song Mr. Tillman.
Oh, to see you again. There's a few outstanding charges. Just before we check you in, let's see here. You left your passport in the mini fridge and a message with the desk says here the picture isn't, oh, just a reminder about our policy. Don't leave your mattress in the rain. You sleep on the balcony, okay, dear. You and your guests have a pleasant stay. What a beautiful tattoo that young man had on his face. And oh, Will, you need a driver out to Philly. Jason Isbell's here as well. He seemed a little worried about you. I'm feeling good, damn, I'm feeling so fine. I'm living on a cloud above an island in my mind. Oh, baby, don't be alarmed. This is just my vibe. No need to walk around. No, it's not too bad. Mr. Tillman, for the seventh time, we have no knowledge of a film that is being shot outside. Those aren't extras in a movie. They're a clientele. No, they aren't running lines, and they aren't exactly thrilled. Would you like a regalo on the patio? Is there someone we can call? Perhaps you shouldn't drink. I'm feeling good, damn, I'm feeling so fine. I'm living on a cloud above an island in my mind. Oh, baby, don't be alarmed, this is just my vibe. Don't need to walk around, no, it's not too bad a climb.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Every 3 months, the New Zealand Police release a map showing the ratio of drugs found through wastewater testing across Aotearoa. Figures for the first 3 months of the year indicate that people in the south, specifically Dunedin, are consuming MDMA at a rate significantly higher than the national average. Wastewater from the greater Dunedin area is treated at the Tahuna plant. MDMA made up 82% of all the drugs that were detected there. The next highest proportion was found in Queenstown, with MDMA making up 66% of all the drugs detected. The wastewater results for the Southern District are quite different from the rest of the country, where methamphetamine dominates the statistics. Wastewater from the Northern Waikato had methamphetamine make up almost 100% of the drugs detected at the end of 2021, while the Southern District had the lowest amount of per capita methamphetamine use out of any of the 10 police districts. Out of the four wastewater testing sites in the south, only Invercargill indicated more methamphetamine than MDMA was being consumed. In Invercargill, 74% of drugs detected were methamphetamine, by far the highest out of all the four areas sampled in the south. On the topic of drug trends, I spoke to Sam Lasham, the founder of the New Zealand chapter of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, a global organisation working to end the war on drugs through education and the promotion of harm reduction. Sam and I talked about some of the risks associated with MDMA use. Sam and I talked about some of the risks associated with MDMA use among the student population of Dunedin, the future of drug trends and drug policy, and also some of the stigma that surrounds the prominent drugs found across Aotearoa. Here's our conversation.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going? Thank you for joining.
Yeah, good, good. Cheers, mate.
Sam, every 3 months, the New Zealand Police release a map showing the ratio of drugs found through wastewater testing across Aotearoa. Figures for the first 3 months of the year have indicated that people in the south, specifically in Dunedin, are consuming MDMA at a rate that's significantly higher than the national average. What do you have to make of these statistics? Should they worry us in any way?
Firstly, it's very much like just due to different demographics. I think the reason it's higher in Dunedin is obviously it's a student city, and it is sort of MDMA very much is the drug of choice among students. And then also in the south, we've got Queenstown as well, where there's much more foreign influence. And overseas, MDMA is obviously hugely popular. So there's those, and with travelers as well. So there's sort of all those things going on. In terms of its use, I mean, I don't think high use is anything to be scared of as long as it's being done in a safe way. Thankfully, we've got brilliant things such as Know Your Stuff going now to make sure people can get it tested and they can do it safely. And yeah, so I think that's sort of the main thing. As long as it's been doing safely, it's pretty good. But what quantity each individual is doing is obviously important. That's not really something you can tell from wastewater, but that's important research that needs to be done, and probably research that's going to start getting covered soon by, I'm not sure if you've talked to Jai Wellen. He researches MDMA. I do Students for Sensible Drug Policy with him. But he's sort of researching into how people use it and the culture around it. So hopefully he might start to see, you know, is it a case of people doing a lot, or is it a small group of people doing a lot, or is it a case of just a lot of people doing it, which is an important distinction.
And that's just something we don't know. There's just no statistics for that.
No, exactly. The only way you can really find that out is going out and surveying people and talking to people. And for quite a long time, you know, it's been very hard to actually start looking into that.
If the wastewater results tell us anything, it's that students and young people in Dunedin are engaging in drug use at a higher proportion than the rest of the country, and that's just a fact. What are some of the you've already touched on it a bit, but can you explain a bit more about like some of the harm reduction initiatives that are in place to safeguard people who decide to use drugs? And as the founder of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, is it enough? And what more can be done?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously we've got drug testing going on with Know Your Stuff. They do amazing work. That's the most fundamental thing we've got for harm reduction here, is making sure people that want to take MDMA are actually taking MDMA and not accidentally ingesting something else. So that's great. And what often doesn't get talked about so much, and is something that both Know Your Stuff and SSDP cover, is during drug testing, obviously, it's a legal requirement that Know Your Stuff chats to the person and ensures they know what they're taking, how to use it safely, and sort of educates them on that safer usage. And that's something Students for Sensible Drug Policy also tries to do every now and then, particularly like clubs days and any opportunity we get really to set up a stool or something around a campus, as we do every now and then. We just go chat to people and be like, hey, look, this is the best way to do it safely. A huge thing we struggle with in Dunedin is, and the biggest harm that comes from all this high rate of use in the student culture, is frequently consumed in consumption with alcohol. And those two do not mix well. For one thing, taking any kind of stimulant with alcohol makes you feel more sober, which means you drink far more than you probably should. It's far easier to overdose on the alcohol itself. But it also means that a lot of these substances, the safest way to take them is by keeping hydrated. And obviously, as we all know, alcohol does the exact opposite of that, which further increases the harm. So it's a pretty problematic mix going on. And that's the number one thing we try and get through to students. The number one harm reduction tip we can really put through to them is don't mix the two together. So what more can be done? I mean, if I really wanted to be hopeful and happy and everything about this, I'd be like, well, really, we need to repeal the Misuse of Drugs Act, bring these substances into a legal framework where everybody knows that when they go and buy it, they're buying a good, solid product that is exactly what they want. It's in a dosage they know. They know exactly what they're getting, and they're told and taught how to use it properly. And we also have, and also, they can go to clubs and know that there's people around to make sure they're safe, as we currently don't do with alcohol, rather than them being removed from that safe environment because clubs aren't allowed to have drug users on premises, technically, and being forced to sort of go in places where there's not that oversight, essentially.
So, Sam, the National Wastewater Testing Program, it specifically looks for methamphetamine, MDMA, cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl. And this year, neither heroin nor fentanyl were detected in reportable quantities. Is this a good sign for drug use trends?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much they can detect. Certainly, obviously, fentanyl is active in such tiny, tiny doses. So I'm not sure exactly the sensitivity of their tests and how much use would have to be occurring for it to be showing up there. Obviously, we did recently, I want to say a month ago now, have a number of overdoses from fentanyl. And it is something that's caused, I think it's caused more deaths in the States than COVID. So pretty scary stuff, the opioid crisis over there. So it's definitely something we should be worried about, but obviously it's not something that's here at the moment. Yeah, and typically, I mean, when people think of opioids, they typically obviously think of injecting drug use. And here it's definitely more a case that people are injecting stimulants as opposed to opioids. But I think we should definitely have we should be starting to put measures in place in case that starts to increase and we start to see more of it, rather than doing it the other way around and it causing a bunch of harm and that spurring us into action.
Ambulance at the bottom of the cliff kind of scenario. Yeah,
exactly, as everyone's been saying repeatedly recently.
Yeah, it's a bit beaten, that saying, eh? Just kind of on that last topic of what drugs we are finding in wastewater and how it's quite specific to the demographic and the geography. So MDMA represents the majority of the drugs used in the Southern District, while meth represented nearly 100% of the drug used, for example, in the Northern Waikato. So there are different taste preferences and for drugs all around the country. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is categories of good drugs and bad drugs and, you know, safer drugs and less safe drugs. Are they arbitrary and unhelpful categories, or do you think that, you know, it's more concerning that there's such high proportion of meth use in the Northern Waikato compared to a high proportion of MDMA use down here? Like, is one more concerning than the other?
There's obviously a much higher addiction potential with methamphetamine compared to MDMA. And typically, due to the context of its use, it does cause more harm to the user. In saying that, the idea of good drugs and bad drugs is highly stigmatizing. And, you know, whenever we talk about bad drugs, it almost also starts to flow onto the people that use bad drugs are bad. And then we're far less willing to feel compassion towards those people and to give them the help they need and those sorts of things. So I don't think those terms are very helpful. And it's really important to see how much our view of different drugs can be. You know, it's the interesting thing with amphetamines is that, you know, there's a lot of ADHD medications and things like that that have amphetamine in them. And typically, you know, getting an ADHD diagnosis is highly expensive and complicated. And something that's very difficult for lower socioeconomic people to achieve compared to those with more resources. So, you know, there's this weird thing that I do think a lot of people view methamphetamine as a more lower socioeconomic drug. From most people I've talked about the demographics, it's not the case. It's throughout society. But that is typically the view. And those people also, they demonize this amphetamine-type substance. But yet they don't, when there's a very similar substance being prescribed in a medical context for ADHD and ADD and these sorts of things to, you know, more affluent people, they don't have anywhere near the same view. And yeah, okay, it's, you know, maybe it's them trying to treat something, sure, but a drug is a drug, you know? Like why is it that we look at it so differently in such different contexts? And I think that sort of plays into why we also demonize the people that use it and that sort of thing.
Well, Sam, thank you so much. These are such eloquent answers. And you obviously know a lot about the topic and you come from a place of wanting to educate people and reduce the harm associated with drugs. So thanks so much for taking the time out to join me and explain a little bit about the drug usage trends that we're seeing in the South. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day, Sam. And thanks for joining.
No worries. Cool. Cheers. See you later. Have a giddy. Bye-bye.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
If you're just joining us now, that was Sam Lasham, the founder of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, discussing a little bit about the recent wastewater data, which has indicated that Dunedin is a hotspot for MDMA usage across the country. We also talked about various other things, such as some of the risks surrounding MDMA and the student population engaging in this drug-taking behaviour. We talked about the future of drug trends and drug policy, and we also talked about some of the stigma that surrounds the more prominent drugs found here in Aotearoa. Coming up on the show, we've got an explainer on the ongoing saga involving National Party MP Sam Uffendale and some of the allegations of harassment and bullying that have surfaced over the past week. But before that, we've got this is the song Love Me Too by the Kiwi band Oh No No. We'll be right back.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
The New Zealand National Party has stood down MP Sam Uffendale and launched an investigation after backing him for 2 days following fresh allegations of bullying behaviour during his university years, which he denies. The move comes after a woman who lived with Uffendale and three other University of Otago flatmates in 2003 alleged in an interview with RNZ that Uffendale was an aggressive verbal bully who could become physically intimidating and would trash the house after excessive alcohol and drug use.
I was locked in my bedroom because I feared for my safety, and he was smashing on my door and yelling obscenities and telling me to get out, hit the road, fatty, and I ended up climbing out of my bedroom window. And
she says that the window was smashed up and her dad rushed to Dunedin to help her move out.
It was clear at the time that he had real issues, real problems with this. He was out of control.
Listening to his maiden speech in Parliament, he talks about lack of accountability and a sense of impunity. I think that's so hypocritical.
The new allegations come on the back of reporting by news outlet Stuff on Monday, which alleged that in 1999, Uffendale, then 16, bet up a 13-year-old as part of a group attack at the prestigious King's College in Auckland, which left the victim bruised and experiencing significant trauma. He was asked to leave the school following the attack. After 22 years, Uffendale apologised to his victim, telling Stuff his remorse was unlinked to his political ambitions. The victim told Stuff he accepted the apology at the time, but was shocked to see Uffendale stand for politics months later. On Tuesday of this week, National Party leader Christopher Luxon stood by Uffendale following the initial allegations, saying he was a good candidate with high integrity and good character. On Wednesday, Luxon's tone had changed. Speaking to RNZ, Luxon called the new allegations very concerning and very serious. When asked whether Luxon saw a place for Sam Uffendale in his caucus, he said this.
What I'd say to you is when new and serious allegations emerged last night, what I need to do is take those incredibly seriously, and that's why I've formed an independent investigation over the next 2 weeks.
The investigation, led by a QC, is expected to take 2 weeks, and its terms of reference have yet to be confirmed. The inquiry could clear Uffendale, or if he is forced to resign, he could stay on as an independent MP. Alternatively, Uffendale could leave politics altogether, which could prompt a by-election in Tauranga. Residents of Tauranga, when interviewed by One News, had various perspectives on the saga.
I think he's quite a capable guy, and I'm quite happy for him to continue on.
The jury's still out on that. I think that he probably deserves a chance to represent Tauranga, but there are some worries there.
I don't think Tauranga will want it, but if it comes down to the point that his leader has lost faith in him now.
If another by-election were to happen, it would come just over a year after the by-election caused by the resignation of former National leader Simon Bridges, which cost the New Zealand taxpayer $1 million at the time.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
If you're just joining us now, that you just heard was a little explainer on the Sam Uffendale saga, the allegations of harassment and bullying that have surfaced over the past week towards the National Party MP. Coming up on the show, we've got another little explainer, this time on Serena Williams' departure from pro tennis. This was concocted by my co-host, who is absent today, Scott Favell. And yes, that will be coming up after the song. This is Parcels. This is The Worst Thing.
That I would have you here. I wish that I could still believe the love.
The song you just heard then was The Worst Thing by band Parcels. Time is 22 minutes to 12 and you've got it tuned to the Thursday R1 News Show. In a column dictated to Rob Haskell of Vogue, international tennis great Serena Williams announced that her appearance at the upcoming US Open would likely be her last. Williams shies away from the idea of retirement, however, preferring to refer to it as an evolution. In her column, it is clear that her decision has been influenced by a balance between family and longevity. The 40-year-old has won 23 Grand Slam single tournament titles, the most in the Open era that began in 1968, and one short of Australian Margaret Court's all-time record. Williams says she'd be lying if she didn't acknowledge how much she wanted to break that record. She also cites her respect for the longevity of fellow American, former New England Patriots and current Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady, who himself turned 45 this month. The column is ultimately a deeply personal reflection of Williams on her career. Her reluctance to retire is clear, if not directly stated. While fellow leading tennis players Ashley Barty and Caroline Wozniacki retired to a sense of relief, Williams does not believe she will feel similarly. Williams discusses the influence of her childhood on her reluctance. This influence was examined earlier this year in the movie King Richard, with Will Smith winning the Academy Award for Best Actor for his role as Williams' father, Richard. Williams' decision is not about how she feels about tennis, as it is about what tennis doesn't allow her to do. While she explains that she could not imagine having children early in her career, she talks about her desire to expand her family and how tennis isn't necessarily compatible with that. Her 2017 Australian Open win came while 2 months pregnant with her daughter Olympia, which resulted in a pulmonary embolism and other complications that nearly cost both their lives. Indeed, her decision to expand her family is clearly affected by Olympia's desire to be a big sister. Williams isn't emotionally ready to call time on her career, but she is certainly in the right place to do so. Williams established Serena Ventures in 2008, and it is now a burgeoning venture capital firm, which such fundees as Masterclass and Impossible Foods. Her company is proudly led by and for women. Williams sees this as important, given that 98% of venture capital is awarded to men. There is no doubt that this is not the last anyone will see of Serena Williams, and for now, the US Open may be the last we see of Williams as a tennis professional. The question now is for how long, given that unlike so many who retire, her passion for the game hasn't faded since her days as a teenager in Compton. That was an explainer as to the departure from tennis that pro Serena Williams has announced over the last week. That was written by my co-host, who is absent today, Scott Favell. Coming up on the show, we've got the recurring segment Feature of the Creature of the Week with local zoologist Andrew Johnston. But before that, we've got a song. This is Hardy and Claire with their new track, Mannequins.
Mannequins to me and tells me to buy something new. Money talks to me. 40 hours a week. Money talks to me. 40 hours every week. I go to school, I got a job to pay for things I'll never own. I'm robbing banks, I'm slinging dough. I'm selling sex, I sell my soul, money for old road.
This is the R1 News on Radio 1 91 FM. Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Kia ora, my name is Seb and you're listening to the Thursday R1 News Show. That song you just heard then was by Nyugam San and the song was called Money Talks. Right now it is time for a very special part of the show. It's Creature of the Week with Andy Johnston. Andy is not in Dunedin right now. He is joining me from Poneke. Kia ora, Andy, you there, mate? Andy, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Perfect.
How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really excited to talk about Black Swans with you, mate.
That's the one, man. That's the one. That's our Creature of the Week this week.
Why Black Swans, Andy? What intrigues you about Black Swans?
Well, I think they're just inherently a really interesting species because they've got a long history both in the natural world as a species themselves, but they have a bit of a meaning when it comes to just thought and reason and scientific reason as well. They sort of have this dual ability of being interesting in both worlds.
What do you mean by that? Are they representative of something?
Yeah. So outside of nature, just as a concept, black swans are sort of seen as a symbol of like the unknown or more of an unexpected surprise. Because if you think back to when scientific ideas were being brought up and whatnot, that was sort of all in Europe and sort of and even as far back as Romans and whatnot, they only had white swans in the area. That's the only thing they could see. So when they had this idea, there was like, well, there's no such thing as a black swan, right? So every swan I see is a white swan, therefore all swans are white. I can make that general assumption from those sort of all those data points that I've collected, right? All swans are white. All swans I've seen are white, therefore all swans are white.
Mm.
But then they came down under, and they saw these black swans. It sort of just like completely destroyed this idea of, well, like maybe we don't actually have all of the information we need to make these ideas. You know, maybe there's information out there that we don't actually have. Maybe there's black swans, you know?
Wow. So a symbol of the unknown.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very cool. And so let's get it right. Are they just down here? Are they just down under the black swans? Were they introduced here?
They were first found in Australia. So the first Europeans to see them were found them in Australia, I think in the 1800s, I think is when they first saw them. No, sorry, I misspoke, in 1600.
super early on. And they found them in Oz. And then in Aotearoa, how'd they get here?
Well, there's actually a bit of a debate about that. Basically, in, I think, 1860, some people brought over about 100 black swans to New Zealand from Australia. So they brought them over here. But the interesting thing is that they've actually, the population here in NZ grew way too rapidly from just those 100 birds. Therefore, the idea is that they came over naturally by themselves as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, so introduced and flew over here.
Yeah. So okay. There's sort of this gray area of whether or not they're a native or introduced animal because, you know, they came over by themselves, but they were also brought over. Mm. So it's a little bit of an interesting gray area, yeah.
They are gorgeous creatures, and like the white swan, they've kind of become symbols of elegance almost. Are they, you know, why? I guess I have questions about their anatomy and what purpose does it serve? What's with the long neck?
Yeah, well, I think with the long neck, that will mainly come with how they eat. So what they do is that they, swans eat like algae and sort of water-based aquatic vegetation. So what they need their big long neck so they can get down underneath and they can eat up all this vegetation off the bottom of the, you know, of the lakes or the fresh water they're in or skim water off the top of the lake as well. So they sort of need it to sort of do all their eating and whatnot.
Right. And where can we find black swans? Can we find them in Otapoti?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, exactly. So actually, I went for a hunt for them. So I was like, man, I really want to see these guys. Like, where would I be able to possibly find them? And there's a couple of places, but I think the easiest place you can probably get to is Tomahawk Lagoon, which is a lagoon like right next door to Tomahawk Beach.
Oh yeah, Tomahawk Lagoon, of course. Yeah.
Really, that's probably the closest one. But even if you just take a drive down the peninsula, like towards MacAndrew Bay and out towards the heads out there, you'll quite often see black swans just kind of around the coast there.
And are they freshwater or are they saltwater?
So they breed in freshwater. So they need freshwater for their like food and for their breeding and stuff. But they're kind of seen in anywhere where the water is quite calm and they can get to.
Right, very cool. And are they, I guess, because I grew up in Tamaki Makaurau and we have a big Western Springs Park there, which is kind of, it seems like it's home to all the geese in Auckland. There's just so many geese. And you occasionally see a black swan. It's like a much more elegant, composed, older cousin of like a little brazen little goose. I'm wondering, have you ever? I wonder because I often tell people if they haven't seen it to Google what a goose's tongue looks like. It's so horrifying. It's got these like barbed spikes. It's got like teeth on its tongue. It's super freaky.
Interesting.
Do swans have teeth on their tongue?
Not that I know of. I don't think so. I'm not sure what swans. What geese rather eat. They might eat something that requires them to sort of have those tongues, but I don't think that swans do.
Okay. Thanks for clarity. So swans and geese have different diets?
Well, I'm not sure. I have to have a look. I've just got a computer in front of me as well, and I'm having a look at these, at some swan tongues, and they haven't got quite...
Not quite as freaky.
Not quite as freaky, but there is something there.
Something going on there.
Something that needs a bit of investigating, I think.
Oh, well, next week we'll do a creature of the week, just specifically on tongues. Tongues of the animal kingdom.
We'll do a whole... Yeah, exactly.
Awesome, Andy. Hey, man, thanks for calling in. It's awesome that we can do this even remotely, even with you in Wellington and me down here. Enlightening us yet again on the beautiful fauna we have in this country. Thanks, man.
Of course, yeah. Go out and see them in Te Reo Māori. They're called the Kakiano. So go and find them. And yeah, they're of least concern here in NZ. So there's about, I think in 2011 there were like 50,000 in the nation, And they're even used as like a game bird sometimes. So people will go out and shoot them. Like there's about 5,000 that are shot every year. So they're not super uncommon. So I reckon if you go out and you have a look on some of these freshwater lakes, then you might have a good chance of seeing them.
Well, that's awesome news. So often when we talk about bird life in this country, it kind of has some pretty gloomy overtones. So.
Exactly.
Awesome. Swans are doing well.
And they're really cool. And they've got this really, so obviously they've got the black feathers, really brilliantly red beaks. And when they fly, when they go for a little fly, they've got these really white underneath the wings as well. So really beautiful thing to look at.
Oh, wow. Gorgeous. Okay, well, I'll pay much closer attention next time I'm in a Tomahawk Lagoon area.
You should. Absolutely should.
Awesome, man. Hey, thanks again for joining me, dude.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me. I absolutely love doing this every week. It's so much fun.
Yo, we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, man.
All right, bye, Andy.
Catch you later.
That was Andrew Johnston, local zoologist, for this week's Creature of the Week. This week we were talking about black swans. We failed to mention the amazing Natalie Portman ballet film, but I'm sure Andy's familiar. That is about it for me and the Thursday R1 News show. It's been a fantastic show today. We started off at the top of the show with a piece on Dunedin's wastewater and the discovery that we are a hotspot for MDMA use in the country. I talked to Sam Lasham, the founder of New Zealand's chapter of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We had a really good conversation about some of the risks associated with MDMA use among the student population of Dunedin, the future of drug trends and drug policy in Aotearoa, and some of the stigma that surrounds the prominent drugs that we're finding in wastewater. Then following that, we had a little explainer piece on the recent stepping down of Sam Uffendale, National Party MP. He has stepped down following two allegations of bullying and harassment during his university years at Otago. After that, we had an explainer on Serena Williams' departure from pro tennis and some of the sacrifices that she has had to make during her very successful career in the sport. And then, yeah, we just had Creature of the Week with Andrew Johnston talking about black swans. It's been a great show. Can't wait for next week. I'm going to go now, and I'm going to leave you with a song. This is Mount Kimby and King Cruel with the song Blue Train Lines. Ka kite anō, everyone. See you next week.
Here's another thing that threw up in my mind, like the razor blade in her wrist, locked in a closet of Deep Space Nine. Deposit for a wasted life. I lost it with a sweepstakes eye and another fucking fight. A junkie in a queue for the library line. That's another lost sight. A stabbing of his eyes. Her veins are now popping like blue train lines. Still pumping on the bathroom floor. And not for the frost, or what? The mirror thought it saw. He got a clearer thought. I'm pulling straight out. You got me jumping from a real safe high. I want a fool forever if you ain't by my side. I want a fool forever if you ain't in my life. I guess been eating away. When I found her, all drowned in grey. I might have drowned her. I call a plate number. And yeah, I might have seen it all. Inhale, exhale, like never in his life before. It's lightly, it's down smoke settled in a fabric of the BME34. Dropping burger crumbs on the CD floor. In the back 12 CD store. Got the radio rack and the CD door. And she filled up on the end and she still needs more. That dying blood. I'm not.
That was the Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.